This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Every year since 2012, thousands of people have passed through the Detroit Reentry Center. The name is a bit misleading. Some prisoners are housed there, especially ones who are soon scheduled to rejoin their communities. Probationers are also in residence, and it's a place where the state sends parolees who violated conditions for their release. The hastily crafted state budget that Michigan's leaders passed recently will spare most of our state agencies from major cutbacks, but one of the casualties is the reentry center. It's going to be closing in January. Natalie Holbrook is with us today. She's program director for the American Friends Service Committee's Michigan Criminal Justice Program. Natalie, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much for having me, April.
Natalie, what went through your mind when you heard that MDOC was closing the reentry center?
Well, we're always glad when a prison closes and the work that we do, because we think that decarceration and closing prisons will lead to safer communities. So I wasn't surprised that it was the reentry center. There have only been about 70 people there in the last many months, and they've been moving towards a transition to close it. So it made sense. There are other prisons I would like to see closed more, but it did make sense.
Like you say, the population at the reentry center has been much lower than its full capacity. I think it can hold up to 700, and as many as 500 people have been housed there at its height. What's your understanding of what is going to happen to the programs that are housed there? It is at the Detroit Reentry Center. It's a residential treatment facility for some. For others, it's a place where vocational education has to happen. Is it your understanding that there will be opportunities comparable to what people had at the Detroit Reentry Center?
Yeah, they're going to continue to offer programs to folks. And then the dialysis folks that were living at Ryan will be moved, I'm pretty sure, to Woodland to get dialysis treatment. So I think everything will just happen at other facilities. Right now, programming is starting to run at some places where it had been shut down because of COVID. So there's been a big gap in program for the last many months. And I'm hopeful that programs will get up and running and that we won't have huge outbreaks, but we have no idea what's going to happen with this pandemic.
So the reentry center at one point was a full-fledged correction center, the Ryan Corrections Facility. And part of the logic of turning it into the reentry center, in addition to making for better relationships in its neighborhood, was that it might not be a bad idea to have a centralized location in the metro area where people might go if what they needed to get straight with were parole violations or other things that, you know, didn't require transport to one of the state's major prisons, which might be far away, something that might be closer to their homes, closer to their families. Is it your understanding that the same kind of opportunities the reentry center offers will still be available to folks with the new configuration?
Yes, I'm quite sure that the department will be providing the programming that people might need to complete or just to be held while they do their time on their violation. I'm hopeful that technical violations have been on the downturn since COVID, and bringing people back into the system doesn't make a lot of sense, especially with transmission of the virus. And then for folks that need programming, those programs will be at other prisons. So, and there used to be two prisons in Detroit. There was Mound Correctional and Ryan Correctional. And those prisons were closed without Detroit legislators knowing that they were going to be closed when they were closed many years ago. And there was a lot of pushback around, why would we take two prisons out of the community where people are landing from Wayne County? And AFSC applauds closures of prisons no matter what, but it wasn't necessarily the best geographic closure. And so having Ryan there did provide jobs for people in the community and created a way for people to not have to be moved around the state if they had a violation. It also, though, was a place where they were sending people to complete program. And I call it Band-Aid programming. So there's programs that the board wants to know that people have taken before they release them to the community. But if it happens 3 months or 6 months before they're released and they've been down for 7 years, I believe they should have been having the programming since the moment they hit the prison. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't quite make a lot of sense to me. And I think it's a good move now to just go back to having programs in the prison and hopefully moving in the other prisons and hopefully moving into a a more rehabilitative way of treating people, because when you land inside, you're technically not going to get any of the department sanctioned programs until you're within a year, maybe 18 months of your earliest release date. For Vocational Village, it might be a little bit different. You might have 2 years of programs, but they're only letting people into those programs in very few numbers. And you have to be under 2 years left in your sentence. And so I think that for me, it's called the Department of Corrections. And at times it can be more idle stuff happening. People aren't getting into programs till they're closer to their out dates. And I'm hopeful that one day we'll have a different model where people actually get good therapeutic programming all throughout their incarceration, if that's where they're going to have to go serve their punishment.
We should say that a portion of the population at the Detroit Reentry Center is there because they need dialysis. And I believe the plan is to move those services to a facility at Whitmore Lake, about 40 miles away. Do you foresee any consequences or ripple effect for those people and their families?
So I'm not sure of the makeup of the population at Ryan right now. And if folks are from Detroit, of course, it's going to be a little bit more of a long haul, but it's not like being sent over the bridge. So I don't foresee it being a terrible harm to families when visits open back up, because they're not happening right now. I do think that there's a bigger question here around why do we keep people in prison who are on dialysis? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if there's a way to really get people moved to the community so that they can be with their families, that's what we would like to see happen, and stop treating people for very chronic and life-threatening health issues while they're in prison. So we have this huge aging population in Michigan, and that we have to have a dialysis unit is a big question for us as citizens to ponder, that people are sick and getting old inside and needing what is really actually expensive care the older they get.
Do you think that the center more or less served the purpose for which it was intended, preparing people to rejoin communities? I hear what you're saying, that the budget realities led to most people not getting any sort of rehabilitative services at all until late in their sentences.
I think that the purpose of putting people back into prison for parole violations is a slap on the wrist. It's not necessarily giving them programs in a 5-month period that are going to change their life forever. I think that people need a lot of support, community support, and they need loving care and arms around them. And a lot of folks need trauma-specific therapies. And if that's not what is being offered in programming, then I don't think it's really going to get to the core of the problem that creates mass incarceration, which is intergenerational trauma and intergenerational violence that is directly connected to legacies of slavery and systemic racism in this country.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Natalie Holbrook. She's the director of the American Friends Service Committee's Michigan Criminal Justice Program. Natalie, while I've got you with us, I did want to ask you about another project that you've been working on. It's a pair of bills that would raise the standards of care for pregnant women who are incarcerated in Michigan. Do we know how many women are in this circumstance right now?
Right now, there's only one pregnant woman at the Women's Huron Valley, which is a great thing. COVID has reduced the number of people entering the department at all. And so there's only one person that we're aware of that is pregnant. In the past years, though, the number of pregnant women has been on the rise. So it's been about 25 women a year who have been going through Huron Valley Women's and delivering babies while they are incarcerated.
As things stand, what is prenatal care like in Michigan's prisons?
So the Department of Corrections has an agreement with St. Joe's Hospital, and the OBGYNs and doctors and nurses at St. Joe's are really wonderful and have been trying to develop curriculum for staff training at the prison. There is a standard of care that is sort of interrupted by security. So what I mean by that is, if you're a high-risk pregnancy and you need to go off site, so you can't do your OBGYN appointment in the prison, you're going to have to be previously and past times shackled and taken to the offsite care facility, which is antithetical to good care for pregnant people or for anybody for that matter, in my opinion. But but we're talking about pregnant folks here. So they'll be taken off site with shackles on. And I think that what our bills are getting at is that we want to remove shackling during transport completely. And we would like to never have a woman shackled in hospital or shackled upon an exam. And so it's the custody things that sort of interrupt the care, the standard of care for the women. And it's also healthcare in prison. There's a lot of people to serve, and there are lots of steps sometimes to get the care that you need. And some people don't know how to be their own best medical advocates. So the Michigan Doula, Prison Doula Initiative is in a memo of understanding with the Department of Corrections, and they have been offering doula services, which has been also super helpful in getting education and care to the women. And we want to see this codified so that that never goes away, that women are getting more information about pregnancy, that they understand the labor and delivery process, that they are aware of high risk things that are going on. And I mean, any person in prison who's pregnant, it's basically a high risk pregnancy. And so we want that kind of care. We also, the bills also include allowing infant to be in arms with the parent once the delivery happens.
Why is it that women who are, that folks who are in prison, that their pregnancies are necessarily high risk? Is it because of just the standards of living are not in line with what doctors understand to be a normal pregnancy?
Yeah, and it's also, so when you're in prison, access, and people are going to argue with me, like state officials might argue with me, but the quality of food in prison is substandard. It's high in sodium. It is overly processed. There's very little fresh fruit. There, as far as I understand, never fresh vegetables. It's all canned.
It sounds like a recipe for preeclampsia.
Yeah. and there are times when custody is, it's about security. Prisons are about security. They're not about necessarily coddling people or taking good care of people or being gentle with people. And so, and I'm not saying that pregnant people need to be coddled, but I'm saying we need to be gentle with one another. And prison is opposite of that. It is, they're sleeping on a thin cushion and they are in very close confinement and there's multiple people around. And it's, so prisons are always either overcrowded or you're isolated. There's not any sort of normal sort of living. And the other piece of the why it's a high-risk pregnancy is that usually the criminal legal process is an incredibly stressful reality. Mm-hmm. And so they've already been through all of these stressors of going through to jail, through the courts, then getting moved into prison. And potentially, many women who are ending up in prison have also been drug users. And so they have this other high risk factor that they've been using drugs. And then a judge, mostly in a paternalistic way, is like, well, you need to go do time. And you're going to be safer here in this prison context than you would be out on the streets. And we think that that's ridiculous, but it's what's been happening up until COVID when people are not entering prison like they were. And so we think these bills are important to make sure that there's good care. And then also the 831 is actually an oversight bill for the whole women's prison.
Can you talk to us about what happens during after delivery for people who are in prison? Like how long are they allowed to have access to their babies?
So it's been on average about 24 hours that they have access to their babies if it's a vaginal birth. And then 48 hours if it's a C-section. The bill would make that a longer period of time, and the discretion would be up to the OBGYN, the treating physician, to have potentially longer care in hospitals so that there can be more bonding, because we know that skin-to-skin contact actually mitigates the trauma that the infant has already been through in utero through the entire criminal legal process. And so we're pushing for skin-to-skin and changing that 24 to 48 hours to make it potentially a little longer. And then the baby is either given to a guardian that has been arranged with a social worker in advance, or is taken by the state if Child Protective Services has been involved, or if there's no guardian to give the infant to.
Have these bills been a tough sale in Lansing?
So far, not totally a tough sell. We're working on them. I think that there's support. I think that people understand that we need humane treatment of pregnant people in prison. I also think that there's an understanding among the legislature and the state, the DOC, that the women's prison has been chronically overcrowded for the last many years, and that having expert eyes through the Corrections Ombudsman's office on the prison so that they can report out to the legislature what's happening there is a good thing. It's transparent government. It's not a bad thing. And the public needs to know what happens in our prisons because we pay for them. So I think that it'll move through. It's just been some negotiating and a lot of work over the last 2 years with stakeholders to make sure that the people who've experienced pregnancy and birth in prison and the women who are held there in general have had a say in the formation of these bills. I mean, I think about the women's prison is that there are a lot of people held there, and it is an older facility, and the structural integrity is problematic. And I think that if folks understood that, like on the West Side, people are living, two women in a wet cell, right? So there's a toilet in there and there's a sink, and then you have to like go to the bathroom in front of your bunkie who could be a complete stranger. Like, I don't think people understand that that's the reality that hundreds of women are living in Michigan. And so I'm hopeful that these bills can sort of flip that up inside out, and we can see that prison is a place of punishment. It's a place of control. And is this really what we want to do in dealing with harms in our communities? And let's start with women who are usually like end up in prison at lower rates, except they've been on the rise lately, because they're a smaller population that we can deal with, and turn this prison inside out and let the public see what's happening.
Natalie Holbrook directs the Michigan Criminal Justice Program for the American Friends Service Committee. Natalie, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, April, for having me.